We're here today to make sure that the respectable face of the BNP doesn't con anybody into believing them.
And you know what? Smash anyone else that defends them. That goes for the government, that goes for the police, that goes for everybody. When I stand for love, we stand for love by being here. Stand for love.
You say something about why you're here today.
Well, I'm Secretary of Notts Trades Council, and we feel it's very important that the Trades Council provides a lead to trade unions in the area and all new trade unionists to oppose the fascists. We oppose them now. We might not have any BNP councillors in Nottinghamshire, but we mustn't let them get a toehold anywhere, and that's why we come down to London to support people in London opposing Richard Barnbrook, who's now got elected there.
Why do you think it's particularly important for trade unionists and people in the labour movement to be involved in anti-fascism?
Because the fascists will divide us, and as trade unionists we're trying to fight against oppression by the bosses at work, and the fascists were determined to be on the bosses' side. And you know, I work in the public sector, we're in for trying to get a decent pay claim, and we know if they had the fascists in power they would have us grovel to the bosses.
And do you think today's been fairly successful?
Yeah, I do. It's been a fantastic number of trade union banners that are up. I've been really impressed by that. It's a really lively demonstration. And we can bring this good news back to Nottinghamshire and campaign locally.
And what sort of things are going on locally that people can get involved in?
Well, certainly we had the BNP tried to visit and have a meeting in Kimberley last year, which we opposed successfully. That never took place. They had a by-election in Ashfield and we opposed, and they lowered their vote. And coming up this summer, the BNP are trying to have a red, white and blue festival in Derbyshire, and we'll be opposing that as well.
Something about how you think today's gone?
Well, I think it's a start. It's only a start, and it's a long overdue start to the anti-fascist movement getting reorganised to confront the BNP. We've had too many years where people have been sleepwalking whilst the BNP have been growing in strength, and it's not been a huge demonstration, not nearly as big as it should have been, but at least it's a start to actually getting to physically oppose the BNP, harass their organisation. And it was really good on this march that we had one speaker, Mark Sawaka of the PCS, explicitly calling for people to support our campaign against the BNP festival.
And in August, the BNP are having their festival in the Midlands to promote their vile politics. And I hope all of us on the 15th and 16th of August will join those people who are going to picket and demonstrate against the BNP at their own event.
Do you want to say a brief little bit about what the details are for, a moment pretty sketchy, what the details are for that event?
Yeah, well, we're planning to be there, obviously, the whole or as much of the weekend as we can. But on the day when we expect most BNP members to be turning up, on the Saturday, we're intending to blockade as much as we can the entrances to the site from all points of view from 9 o'clock. We realise people from out around the country will probably not be able to get there till later. But if we can get a significant proportion blockading the streets, we hope we should be able to keep it up all day and have a really massive rally in the middle of the day.
So the idea is basically to try and stop people getting in?
If at all possible, it all depends on numbers. And, well, today, as I say, is an indication. We had the numbers that were here today, actually in Codner on the 16th. I think we could stop the BNP festival, but it's a question of whether the people prepared to come along today are prepared to go back to their areas and come again on the 16th and get more people with them.
$10 was...
Climax Action is action by the people, and it's often arrestable because we're actually actively disobeying, actually getting in the way of something. It's not just protest, it's not just campaigning or petitioning, it's actually getting in the way of business as usual.
There is a fast spread of people the entire way around the perimeter of the base. So if you want to give yourself a cheer for that, I'm going to go and close the gates of the base with some nuclear tape, and the base will be closed for about 5.
Get out there and find out what's going on in your area, find out for indie media. You know, come along, and it's much better sitting at home getting pissed off watching the telly.
Welcome to Rise Up Radio.
A
Ahoy from the heart of our lovely city. We bring you another exciting and jam-packed Rise Up radio show. This month with special guest presenter Hitch Yesser, who was arrested on terrorism charges in May, but is now free on bail to join us and talk about his experiences. Lots of news, commentary and local music, and an exclusive interview with Captain Paul Watson. All that and more after this from Model Morning.
Hi, I'm Captain Paul Watson, and you're listening to Rise Up Radio.
Right, hello. You're listening to Rise Up Radio, and this is our sixth show. And this month, I'm pleased to say that we are joined in the studio with lots of people who've come to talk about various things that are going on in and around Nottingham and beyond. So I'm just going to pass the microphone around now and get people to say hello.
Hello, my name is Hisham Yeza.
Hi, I'm Sophie from Rising Tide.
Hello, I'm Charlie from Still Within.
Hello, I'm Garodo Queen from Ireland.
Hi, I'm Lamad School from Jordan.
And I'm Genevieve, and you just heard me.
Hi, I'm Trevor from the campaign against the BNP.
and John. And I'm Jacques. So I think next, well, we just need to get a quick update, I think, now from Trevor. Is that right? On the list? Update?
Because we started the show with a report from the BNP demonstration, well, the anti-BNP demonstration in London. And you're involved with the campaign against the BNP festival.
Yeah, I mean, locally, that's been a fairly major focus of the campaign against the BNP recently. They're having their national festival in Denbigh in Derbyshire, which is about half an hour from Nottingham. So that's always been a major focus of activists locally.
So tell us a bit about this festival.
Like I said in the report, it's taking place in August from Friday the 15th to Sunday the 17th. At the Bungalow on Codner Denby Lane. For those of you who like playing around with Google Maps, that's DE58PT. So it's a big campaign building against that, Not Stop the BNP versus other groups. Antifa are also nationally doing a mobilisation and hopefully going to bring in people from all over the country.
What are all these people going to do?
Well, the basic plan, certainly on the 16th, is to get a mass mobilisation starting at 9 o'clock in the morning and try and stop people getting in, or at least cause as much disruption as we can.
People can turn up on the day, 15th, 16th of August. Is there anything other people in and around Nottingham can do to help the campaign?
Probably the best thing is if people want to find out about getting involved, they can check out our website, which is nobnpfestival.wordpress.com. Because they can get in touch with us through that if they want to get involved. So it means obviously there's going to be a lot of planning that still needs to go on, working out how to get people there, promoting it. We'll need a certain amount of fundraising in order to fund for those things going. You know, we've already worked on that a bit, so getting some various unions on board for support. I mean, I don't know if this is probably a Rise Up Radio exclusive, but I found out today that the RMT are going to be throwing their weight behind it nationally, which sounds quite impressive. So,
cool. The other thing is that the BNP applied for a festival licence and they didn't get it.
What's gone on, it actually, when you look at the exact details, it's actually quite complicated what went on. But basically, they applied for a licence. They had the licence application hearing was on Tuesday, June the 10th at Ripley Town Hall. Initially, the Derbyshire police had said, OK, this is fine, we're not going to object to this. They decided at the last minute that they were going to impose a series of conditions, including the building of 7-foot-high fence around the entire place, installation of lighting, a greater number of security for every person who was there, conditions the BNP could never really meet. And if they didn't get those conditions, the police were going to oppose it. Now, what happened at that point was when the panel who were considering the application went away to consider it, when they came back, the BNP basically withdrew their application and stormed out. Quite amusingly, Alan Warner, the guy who overturned his security guard, apparently was accusing the police of being cahoots with the anti-fascists. Rather strange, considering they were all standing outside, surrounded by hundreds of cops. But that was the claim that he was making. They've withdrawn their application and the panel has adjourned. Now, whether that means they're not going to get an application, certainly Simon Darby, who's the party deputy leader, is claiming that he's heard that the authorities, whoever the heck they're supposed to be, are going to allow them to have their festival with only noise monitoring equipment. Now, whether he's just lying through his teeth or whether there's some backroom deal going on, we're not quite sure yet.
So, licence or no licence, it seems that the festival will go ahead, and therefore opposing it as well.
They certainly say that even if they don't get the licence, they've said this since day one, that they're going to go ahead, and certainly we plan to mobilise against it on the basis that it is taking place, because it's the only, otherwise they'll just try and claim it's not and use that against us.
Okay, so no bnpfestival.wordpress.com is for more info. Okay, up next we've got a song by a band called Moonbuggy, and they have a new album released. The album is called Sonic Navigation. Somewhere, I don't know. So the album's just gone out. There's, I think, a launch party at the Sumac. They're playing various gigs around. Moonbuggy.info is the web address. So. And this song is called Scooby-Doo. We'll be right back. That was Scooby-Doo by Moonbuggy. We've got Sophie here.
Hello.
Hi, you work for Rising Tide?
I work with the Rising Tide Network, yes. It's an international network of people confronting the root causes of climate change. I've worked with them here and in Australia and New Zealand and the US. So Rising Tide is a very direct action focused kind of network of people. Been working on lots of projects over the years, including solidarity for different campaigns around the world and trying to shut down stuff that's happening here. They've been involved with Climate Camp and getting that going, and many anti-fossil fuel campaigns. More recently, Rising Tide and I have been getting involved with Leave It in the Ground, which is kind of a new network in the UK that's springing up of different people who are taking action against coal here. It was the banner on the of the folks who stopped the coal train going into Drax a couple of weeks ago and like shoved all the coal and started unloading it onto the tracks.
Drax is in Drax Power Station. It's in Yorkshire.
Yep, so a load of people stopped a train and unloaded the coal on the tracks and said, you know, we can't be taking this coal and burning it at Drax. And they're also connected with, there's a group of kids in North Wales who are stopping coal mining going on there. They've got a big mine in their area, and that's the Coal Hole. If you check that online, and you get details about what they're up to. And then, more locally around here, there's the there's a proposed coal mine in Chipley, and it's due to start any day now. People are waiting for the diggers to turn up. And out there, people have now gone in last week and are squatting the buildings that are left on their land. The locals have been evicted, and people have come in and taken their place and said, no, we're going to stay here and we're going to stop you mining this land.
So Chipley's in Derbyshire? That's really close from here.
Yeah, it's not far from here at all. It's just over the border in Derbyshire.
And just far enough for us to go and ring them now. I think we're going to ring with someone there. You mentioned Rising Tide. Rising Tide focuses on different aspects of climate change specifically, or more environmental issues.
Climate change is kind of the thing that's brought the network together, but it's got a broad interest of both environmental and social justice, and looks at the ideas around climate justice and what's causing climate change and what's causing the inequalities that we have on our planet and the way that we treat each other and use and abuse each other and resources. So it's very much many different things woven together. And because the climate crisis now has kind of brought together a lot of different people working on a lot of different campaigns under one kind of just umbrella to say, like, no, we're not doing this, and help support each other internationally.
Yeah. Okay. So there's this camp in Chipley. Let's see if we can ring them.
Hello.
Hey, is that Barry?
Yeah.
Hi, Barry. It's John from Rise Up Radio here. How's it going?
Yeah, good at the moment.
Good at the moment. Yeah, from what I understand, you are with some people there occupying a house which is on the site of a planned open cast coal mine in Derbyshire somewhere.
Yeah, just between Snorley and Shipley in Derbyshire, yeah.
Cool, and you've been there for a few days. Could you tell us a little bit about what sort of been happening when you got there? What's been going on?
it's been quite a hectic few days, really. We got to the site Tuesday night, I think. No, Wednesday night? I'm not sure. We got to the site and we've squatted the house and secured that. And there's also aerial defences that have been put up, like nets and trees and big tripod on top of the house. And, that's where we're at the moment.
So you've got there, you're kind of digging in to kind of stay there for a long time.
Yeah, that's the plan. I mean, we've been given our court papers already for the 30th. But yeah, we're carrying on with securing the place more and more. And more people are coming along, and we've been given a lot of support by locals donating us food and tools and all kinds of things like that. So really good at the moment.
Because how do the neighbours feel, like kind of the people who live in the area? Because I guess they're going to have an open cast coal mine next to them quite soon.
Well, yeah, if a lot of them are very happy about it. One of them I was talking to the other day says in Mapley, which is one of the villages nearby, 85% of the people are really against it. Few of them don't care, and the rest have vested interest, kind of have money involved in it. So it's been really the amount of local support. There's been a few local campaigns in different villages against it for years, and then gone all the way up to the Secretary of State, who said, no, this is going ahead. So there's nothing that local people can do about it. They've been denied a voice.
Yeah, yeah. So you just mentioned that papers have been served. That basically means that the owner is taking you to court to try and get you out of that house.
Yeah. It's owned by UK Co. So already been served papers. Just 3 days we've been here. Not till the 30th, of course. So.
I mean, you know, people might be listening to our show. They might be thinking, what can I do to support what's going on there? What can people do?
I think we've got a wish list somewhere on the internet. I can't think off the top of my head what we need most importantly from that. But just polyprop, I'm being shouted. Polyprop's really useful. But coming up here and like helping work on the fences or helping stay here on the land. Anything they feel they can do, even if it's just telling other people about it, that's still a really useful part of things.
Yeah. Well, I think just to fill in, I think on not in the media, I think the wish list is up there and details of how to sort of get there. Well, Barry, then I'll just leave you now and wish you good luck with everything down there.
Cheers.
Cool. Okay. Good luck with everything. Speak to you soon.
Okay. Bye.
Right, that was Barry. Back to Sophie now. Can you tell us a little bit about coal and the reason why coal is bad?
Coal is really, really bad. I mean, fossil fuels, we now know, are really, really bad. And coal is the dirtiest of them all. And we're at a point now where there's no debate over whether the climate's changing or not, and it's changing for the worse. And all the top scientists of the world have got together and said we have to cut all our carbon by at least 80%. And which basically means we need to stop drilling any oil, any coal, any gas, and stop burning the fossil fuels. But instead, there's plans for many new open cast mines, like this proposal in Derbyshire. They're planning 7 new power stations, which are coal powered in the UK, including Kingsnorth is the first of that. But there are big plans to stop stuff happening at Kingsnorth. I'm sure you'll be hearing more about Climate Camp during this show. But, you know, if you want to stop and resist coal, that's a great place to come and start, and also meet other people who may put from your area who also are up for resisting coal and stopping them burning this fossil fuel, which is, it's the dirtiest of them all. It's crazy that we're starting new projects surrounding coal in this country.
Because from what I understand, it's about the extracting, which is really damaging. It's about the burning, which is really damaging. Can you tell us a little bit why the government is pushing for coal as much as it is?
Well, gas and oil reserves are going down. And so they've currently been like the cheapest source of energy. But now it's getting to the point where coal is suddenly like cost effective again. And I mean, we have coal reserves. We actually import over two thirds of the coal that we burn as well. So they're pushing for that as an alternative fuel so they can carry on burning it basically and carry on the economy that's on its crazy headlong dive into climate chaos.
Okay, you've been involved in campaigns against coal, not just in the UK, but sort of in other parts around the world. Where have you been?
In Australia, I spent a year with Australia Rising Tide, who are based around Newcastle, which is the largest coal port in the world. And they currently have plans to expand it by 60%. And we burn Newcastle coal in England. I mean, coal comes from Australia. I mean, it's crazy. They, as well as the carbon of burning the coal, like you can take it all the way around the world to here on ships. So there's campaigns there to both stop new mines in the area and to stop the infrastructure being built. And that's ranged to a whole kind of actions like locking onto the coal trains and getting onto like the big coal loaders they have and shutting them down. And one of the biggest and most community actions that we've done down there is actually getting out into the harbour and getting out into the shipping channels and blockading the coal ships. Just like, you know, it's the whole community comes out, you've got families, you've got kids, you've got everybody all on like canoes and makeshift rafts made out of inflatable tyres. It's like, but you're getting out there and you're actually getting in front of the ships and saying, no, we're not having this stuff leaving our port and going around the world to be burnt. because it's our climate that's changing as well. Newcastle had one of the biggest storms in history where, I mean, people died and a massive coal ship was washed up on the beach right where we were having our protests. This was like a few weeks after, like the day after they okayed another mine in the area. And people are saying, you've got to make these links there. So there's a growing energy around there. And in about 2 weeks' time, Australia having their first climate camp, and it's going to be in Newcastle with a plan to stop and shut down the operations in Newcastle Harbour.
Okay, so Australia is very active. I've heard stuff about New Zealand before.
Yep, in New Zealand there's a group called Save Happy Valley, and they're just one of the people working on stuff. But they, Happy Valley is another proposed coal mine on the west coast of the South Island of New Zealand, and they were meant to go in over 2 years ago now and start mining it. And a group of people moved in, like in Bodge House, but slightly more wild, you know, it's really hard to get to, and have been occupying it for 2 years now non-stop, and they still haven't moved in and they're still not mining it. So that's a real example of people just getting in there and saying this is not going to happen and getting in the way. And they've also done things like they've blockaded trains. They blockaded a train and a load of people got a huge court case, and at the end of it they got off, or they got really low charges. So the next day a whole load of people did it again. You know, it's like we're just going to keep coming back, and we're not going to let you ship this stuff out and burn it.
Are there any other struggles around the world to maybe mention or highlight?
Yes, some of the other things, there's a lot of coal mining going on in United States. Appalachia is all full of coal, where they literally blow off the top of mountains. It's called mountaintop removal. And they blow that off the top of the mountains and then get the very small amount of coal and then dump it all in the valleys and make it all flat. And then they build things like prisons and Walmarts there. And the local communities are like, you see their waters all brown and they're just getting kicked out of their areas. And I mean, coal mines going all over the United States. Down in Arizona on the Navajo reservation, now for about 20 years Peabody Coal have been involved with complicated situation, but they're basically pushing off the indigenous people off their land so they can mine for coal. And spent some time visiting and helping there, and it's a story you see everywhere, is that it's the people who have who are causing the least carbon emissions and who are the least kind of affluent, the poorest people, have the most effects. And these people have been living off the land, and now the water table has dropped because they use the water in the mining process to make all the slurry lines, and they're getting kicked off their lands, and they're not getting as much rain as they used to because the climate's changing. And it's like effects of this coal mining is attacking people from all angles, and they're trying to scrape out a life in a place where they used to live sustainably and knowledgeably how to live off the land without causing all this like terrible stuff that we are with our lifestyles. And you see that all along, that people are kicked off their land, whether it is the Navajo there or even up at Bodge House, which is a squat in Derbyshire. You see there the people whose house it is, they got kicked out, and there's all like hobby horses, and there's an old piano, and it was a beautiful house with roses over the door, and you could see being there just visiting what a lifestyle, you know, this little family had. And all the way around the world, different ways, people are being forcibly evicted from their lands so we can mine more coal to burn, to mess up the climate. And it makes no sense. Like, the entire process is completely damaging.
Okay. If people are listening and they, you know, they're angered up now, they, you know, they want to do something, where can they go for more info, and how can they get involved?
Well, come to Climate Clamp is one of the first things. Or there's a few websites. There's leaveitintheground.org, and that's there you'll hear about all the different campaigns, especially the one nearby, but from all the other coal campaigns that are happening. Check out risingtide.org.uk for climate action all around the UK. We've got about 14 local groups now. And also check out Climate Camp, and hopefully see you all in a field in August.
Cool. That's the 4th to the 11th of August, I think. Excellent. Okay. Well, thank you, Sophie.
Thank you.
And then now we'll go for a short non-commercial break.
And now for a non-commercial break.
The coal industry is getting too big for its boots.
We're taking action now to stop new power plants from belching out tons of CO2. Huge open cast mines threaten to strip the country of its soil and fuel unsustainable energy use, when what we really need is food on people's plates. The Climate Camp goes to King's North, proposed site for the first new coal-fired power station in 30 years.
Coal is the dirtiest form of power, and because of the problems with oil running out, our governments are seeing coal as a solution to our energy problems and are planning on building coal-fired power stations, opening open cast mines and basically digging more and more carbon out the ground and putting it in the air, and we have to stop them, otherwise it will be too late.
Because the cracks in the current system of economic growth are showing, and we're working out what we're going
to
do.
Because we want to take control of our lives.
Because we want to find the alternatives by working together collectively.
Whether it's taking part in workshops, helping to set up or run the camp, or joining in to take direct action against developments like new coal-fired power stations.
And you're standing up for something that you believe in, and you're saying, no, we don't want this to happen anymore, basically, and that is a very empowering feeling.
Being at the camp is about people getting together to respond positively to the situations we face, be it the collapse of global economic systems or the collapse of global ecosystems.
We should all stand up and use our rights. The world is our responsibility and we need to fight for it.
There is only one thing that can stop King's North and override the profit motive driving it. A mass movement. Climatecamp.org.uk. We're getting there. Be prepared.
The Sumac Garden Party. On Sunday, the 20th of July, the Sumac Estate in Forest Fields opens its gates to the general public for a one-off spectacular display of culture and ambience. Browse the magnificent grounds and take in our beautifully manicured gardens. Sample sensationally sophisticated summer cuisine and revel in the atmosphere as musicians set the tone with live performances and a specially erected garden party soundstage. This is a truly one-off experience not to be missed. But don't worry, you needn't even purchase tickets in advance. Simply come along on the day and make a donation. This will grant you access to the grounds and the Sumac interior for the entire day. The event runs from 12 noon until 8. As well as guaranteeing yourself an afternoon to remember, you will be supporting a truly worthy cause, with all profits from the day going to Eastside Climate Action, a local group who will be part of this year's Camp for Climate Action. For more information, please go to www.sumac.org.uk or visit climatecamp.org.uk. The Sumac Garden Party. You'd have to be terribly posh to miss it.
Listen up, people! Do you wish you had more skills? Well, stop wishing and get skilled up at the Sumac Skillshare! Get with the 11-week program! It runs every Saturday from the 3rd of May to the 12th of July! Come for free workshops where you can learn how to bake your own bread, woodworking skills, tool sharpening, hula hooping, and lots more! You think I got where I am today without the Skillshare program? Forget about it! For more detail, check out eastsideclimateaction.org.uk, Nottingham Indie Media. Call 07944-889-580. Or look out for flyers in libraries, cafes, or the Sumac Center. The Sumac Saturday Skillshare. Get skilled up!
Well, this right here is
the mule.
The mule!
Yeah!
Ah, the mule! Long awaited to upload that feature, isn't it? But
It's here. It's finally arrived.
Yeah, we got it this week. Hot off the press. It's looking really good. Nottingham pull out in the middle. Wicked content. Lots of like really hot topics and issues.
Where can you get it?
You can get it at loads of places in town, like the Alley Cafe, Sumac Centre.
Art organisation.
The Place in Sherwood.
Crocus Cafe.
Yeah, Nottingham University. Yeah, the Crocus.
Leighton. Green Festival.
The Green Festival. That's what's left of it. Where they're not washed away.
Anyway,
meal good.
Alternatively, check it out online at themule.info.
Hi, I'm Captain Paul Watson, and you're listening to Rise Up Radio.
Hitch, where are we, and why are you here?
Thank you, Ben. This is the Portland building on the University main campus, and today there's an event held about civil liberties. It's called the Civil Liberties Conference.
We sorted this with Magna Carta. What they give, they take away, so we must try harder. I know you've got the heart for this, but you don't want to be a martyr. You don't want to be a poster boy. You want your life back to roam further. The four walls, wide glass, cold light and no curtains. We know for certain they got this wrong, and no person should be swept away. You're not dirt, the machine is not working. For the likes of us, this is the plea until there's no earthen. Free Hisham, yes, until there's no breath left in us. Cause he's a friend of ours, and this is not his destiny. He's got books that reach up to the ceiling, and I don't know what you've been reading. But when I was told he took him away, I could not believe what I was hearing. I remember watching Woody Allen's Manhattan with Hish, in a social with Carlo and Nick, arguing about Einstein and Big, till Sol woke up Karina as Dave, Aid, Kenner and Rish. And now we're on the phone and you're going through this, showing what you're made of with your mind built like bricks. You came here strong and you remain as strong as idiosyncratic. We love your cartoons and idioms, your ceasefire, you fought for democratic freedom. We walk for what you believe in. Colin Campbell stands with his hand on the register. Look for a lead and all you find is a shopkeeper. With a weakness for masons, your checks are backs in Asia. While police with tasers arrest students researching papers. So what are we afraid of? Seems the government traded places, pointing guns at us and guns in foreign places. I'm not trying to be outrageous, but sometimes fear is contagious. When they take your mates away, it makes you jaded. When they jail your friends, you recognise faces on front pages. It's no longer abstract, it's not coffee shop or kitchen tables. It's not me and Hish, 2 a.m. laughing and speculating. It's me at home, and my mate alone, facing deportation.
Right to protest is probably the most important right you can fight for. The way you express your individual freedom and your right to be a free citizen. And it's a shame that in the last few years, past governments have used various political contexts to try and stifle that.
So that was a track called No New Breaks by Magna Carta, and as you may have detected, it has some local relevance. So I'm going to talk now to Hicham Yeza, who we introduced earlier. Hitch is an academic, and he's also a writer and an editor of a political magazine called Ceasefire. Back in May, he, along with a student at Nottingham University, was arrested on the university campus under terrorism legislation. And he was then detained for 32 days and finally released on the 16th of June. So he's just here to tell us a bit about his experiences. So Hitch, can you just tell us a bit about what happened to you on the 14th of May?
Yeah, sure. Thank you, George. If I may start, it's a song called Magna Carta by No New Breaks, so it's the other way around. But thank you for the introduction. If I start with the beginning, on the 14th of May 2008, I was making my way to my university office. That's on the main campus of the University of Nottingham, and I had a call from a friend of mine, Riz, who studies quite near my office, and he was a bit worried because he saw lots of police officers inside my office and around my office. And I was a bit worried and concerned when I heard this, and told him it was most probably a break-in. Made my way to the Trend building where my office is located, and was arrested upon arrival by the police, and was told that it would be it was under the Terrorism Act of 2000, Section 41. My reaction, of course, was complete disbelief and a sense that this was some sort of farce or a joke. And in fact, you know, were it not such a serious matter, you would have called it a fairly laughable kind of thing. I was still very, very well in a state of shock and bemusement for pretty much the rest of the day, as I was taken to Bridewell Police Station and went through the entire process of waiting for hours, you know, being subjected to extensive fingerprinting, DNA sampling, initial questioning and all that. So, yeah, that was how it started.
Did you have any idea of what was really going on at that time? Were you just completely baffled?
Absolutely no idea. I mean, I knew that they had the wrong man and the wrong person, for sure, from the outset. But I was struggling to kind of think of what possibly could have been the reason for the arrest in the first place. The best thing I could think of was we had, I'm a member of an artistic troupe which runs, which does shows, which are both dance and acting shows. And we recently did a play at the Nottingham Arts Theatre, which was on Palestine, and I was one of the leading actors in that play, and it touches upon things like terrorism and the kind of the war on terror and all that, and I thought that's the best I can think of. Maybe my involvement as an actor in my artistic work was the reason for it, but I couldn't think how that could be. It was not until probably at least a day later from after my initial arrest, I was told that the presence of my office computer of a document called the Al-Qaeda Training Manual was the reason I was arrested. And upon hearing that, I was first, again, very surprised. But second, kind of just hopeful that this meant that it would be released within you know, a few minutes or a few hours, because obviously I thought the police would be kind of competent enough to realise that this was a case of a gigantic misunderstanding rather than anything else.
So were accusations being levelled at you at this time that, in regards to terrorism? Was it just vague, or were there specific allegations?
Well, the first charge was fairly nebulous. I mean, it's called the Commission, Preparation and Instigation of Acts of Terrorism, which could be anything. It doesn't mean anything at all. And I kept asking what the actual sin, so to speak, was. Nobody could tell me anything. They said you have to wait until you get to be interviewed, which I did. When the questions started, one of the first questions was, you know, can you tell us about this Al-Qaeda training manual? Which is how I knew that was what they had. And this is the reason why the whole operation was launched. And like I said, I mean, my instant reaction was to think, well, at least this means this will be over very, very soon, because I could not see how this could take more than a few minutes to settle. I explained to them the origin of the document. A friend of mine, the very same person who had alerted me incidentally that morning, Riz Wansabir, who's an MA student in politics and who was preparing to apply for a PhD in politics next year at Nottingham, was someone who's a friend, and I was helping him draft his PhD proposal over the past few weeks and months, because of my previous work as editor of political magazine and my interest in politics in general. He asked me to help him draft the PhD proposal and maybe, you know, share my insights into the topic he was considering, which is political Islam, and in specific the Islamic movements of the late 20th century. So I explained to them, I said he was in the habit of sending me documents, and you know, it was in the context of me helping him with drafting the proposal. The evidence, the documentation and the exchanges of communication between me and him were very clear on this. It was very clearly a case of someone helping someone else in a very, very legitimate research matter. So as far as I was concerned, this was a matter that could be sorted in no more than 6 minutes. Instead, what we had was the police asked the courts for more time, and we were arrested on these terrorism charges for 6 days. 6 days in which we were kept in police custody, and pretty much our entire lives were put under extreme and very, very intermittent scrutiny. And well, it wasn't the easiest of times, and you know, I'm still surprised that it took so long for the police to discover something that was extremely easy to establish for anyone who knew me or who had access to the basic necessary information, which they had.
So what happened after 6 days?
Well, after 6 days, as I had told them and as I had predicted, we were informed that no charges would be brought against us. We did not receive any apologies or any official documents saying we were cleared of charges. We were simply told that that particular document, our color training manual, if we were found in its possession again, then we would be liable to facing yet another investigation, which could lead to another arrest, which could lead to a conviction, or at least you know, being charged. Immediately after my release, within a few seconds, I had a couple of people from the immigration services who served me with a detention notice, essentially meaning that I would not actually be released, but instead would remain in police custody until I was handed over to the immigration services. And again, my reaction was extreme shock and surprise. And I think my first words were, "This is ridiculous." It was a very hard thing to come to terms with, because of course mentally you gear yourself towards the fact that the police have 6 days, and you know you haven't done anything, so you know that the sixth day is the day where you're going to be released. And it was very hard for me initially to come to terms with the idea that this is not the end of it. Far from it. It turned out to be the very beginning. I was charged under the Immigration Act for offences which the Home Office has alleged I had committed. I said I was happy to defend my position and fight my case in court, and indeed a court hearing was scheduled for mid-July. I was taken to an immigration detention centre in Manchester Airport with a view to transfer me to another immigration centre in Oxford. All of this is 2-3 days after the re-arrest. When I was in Manchester, however, out of the blue we were told that everything, you know, the procedures, the court case, were going to be dropped, and instead the Home Office has decided to issue an order for a fast-track deportation, meaning that I did not even have the chance to put my case in court and defend myself and against the charges.
And what charges were they?
Well, I mean, the Home Office is saying that my stay in this country, well, they're alleging that there's issues with it, and as far as they're concerned, I had essentially the status is there's issues with the legal aspect of my stay in the country, and these are charges I said I'm more than happy to challenge and oppose, and I'm very confident of my position, and so are my solicitors, and this is something I said I'm happy to address in court. And I was essentially denied that right, and was told that it'll be a swift whisking away, essentially. I was given a week. Luckily, we had a campaign that was set up to fight this unjust decision, which put a lot of pressure on the Home Office to reconsider its case. And we had a legal team which made sure that there was an injunction of the removal, which meant that the directions to remove have now been cancelled, or at least put on hold for the moment being while the case is being reconsidered.
Why do you think they were trying to fast track you out of the country?
Well, again, it's not. I'm no conspiracy theorist, and I do not like to speculate when information is not really easily available. So nobody knows what went in the minds of those people at the Home Office who decided to do this. However, having spoken to many people from the legal profession, it's easy to kind of establish that my rearrest and the follow-on fast-track deportation most likely would not have happened were it not for the initial political context of the first arrest. Pretty much everyone I've spoken to has said that they could not see how they would have been this draconian in their actions had it not been for the fact that I was arrested on terrorism charges and then cleared and released from those charges. And, you know, or at least from those accusations. And like Alan Simpson, the MP for Nottingham, said in my defence, this is, you know, clearly an attempt by the authorities to try and cover up the initial mistake of the first arrests. And I cannot honestly say this can be discounted as an option, as an explanation.
So that was possibly a means of covering up the wrongful arrest initially, was to actually deport you as opposed to later remain and speak about your experiences.
I think it's certainly one element that played a huge part, simply because the fast tracking of someone's deportation is not something that happens lightly. And for someone who's got a court date coming up, who is willing to fight his case and put his case to the court and accept the consequences, for the Home Office to essentially say we're not willing to wait that long and we'd rather have him out of the country very soon, in a matter of days, in fact, indicates some sort of political expediency at work here.
Can I ask, what's it like to be held in a detention centre?
Well, I was held first in police custody, which was extremely hard. It's a cell with, you know, just you know, four walls and nothing else. You sit there and it's extremely hard on the mind, because it's something that, you know, very akin to sense deprivation. It's something that cuts you off from the world, and in no time, you know, in a matter of minutes, and certainly after a number of hours, you become extremely fragile emotionally and very not unstable. I'd say very agitated. You know, in spite of your attempts to stay calm, because there's this element of uncertainty. You're not sure what's going to happen to you, and I would argue if you're innocent, it's even harder for you than if you were guilty, because if you're innocent, it's the entire thing cannot be explained to start off with. So therefore, nothing makes sense, and logic ceases to be this kind of dependable element that you can rely on, and you can, you know, do some sort of clear thinking about cause and effect and all that. You can't do that when you're innocent. Nothing makes sense, and therefore you can't make any sort of predictions or any sort of rational thinking. When I was taken to the immigration detention centres, where I've been held for the remainder of the 32 days, so I think it was more like 3 weeks, being taken from one detention centre to another, the conditions were slightly better, in the sense I had access to a phone, which meant I could speak to
you know, my supporters, my loved ones, my solicitors. It was a huge relief to be able to do that. But still, it kind of exposed me to an entire world, an invisible Britain, where you saw lots of people who you would not meet otherwise. And it has made me extremely aware of the conditions of all those who are languishing in the immigration kind of detention universe. I could talk about it for hours, but I think time is limited, so
maybe another time we'd like to hear more about that. Can you just tell us basically, you release on the 16th of June, and I mean, then what? Are you a free man? Does this continue?
The case continues. We're still awaiting for the Home Office to make its decision. There's been a lot of representations made to the Home Office from prominent politicians, MPs, writers, artists, academics, and ordinary concerned citizens. People who, for the most part, know me personally, and for others who have come to know me or know about my case, to say to the Home Office, some sense should prevail, and this is someone that the Home Office should be fighting to keep in the country rather than the other way around. Spending so much time, efforts, and taxpayers' money to try and deport him simply doesn't make any sense at all. And at the moment, we're just waiting for the Home Office to kind of clarify its position and see whether it still intends to deport me. And of course, we, myself and my legal team, we intend to fight this to the very end, because I think the way I've been treated has been in many ways a disappointment to me, considering how much I love this country and how much I've contributed to the community, both the student community and the local community. I've been here for 13 years as a student, as an academic, as someone who has been engaging in the as a citizen, really. I think I would have appreciated had I been treated in a fairer, more respectful way. And I intend to essentially fight my corner and clear my name. And that's my aim at the moment. And there's been a campaign that was set up to fight for my release and fight for my right to stay here, for which I am immensely grateful. And the fight goes on, essentially. And this is what I'm doing at the moment. I'm heavily involved with the campaign to try and make sure we end up with we secure a swift and positive resolution to this case.
Okay, so credit due to the Free Hitch campaign then?
Absolutely. My stay in detention was extremely bearable simply because of this, because of the hundreds and thousands of people who have campaigned for me, have marched in my defence on university campus, the biggest demonstration the university campus has ever seen, the hundreds and thousands of messages, texts, postcards, faxes, you name it. I've had so much support that it was overwhelming and it made all the difference. And I'd like to take this opportunity to thank every single person who's ever been a supporter and who continues to support me for everything they've done for me. And I'd like to thank Alan Simpson, my MP, for doing so much to fight for my case and for continuing to do so. It has been really crucial.
Okay, well, thanks a lot for coming in and talking to us today. It's appreciated. Now, you've brought some music with you, is that right?
Yeah, I did. I mean, that first track we heard just now, that's by an artistic outfit called No New Breaks, based in Lancashire in Mexico. And the actual singer is someone who's a Nottingham University graduate, someone I've known for more than 10 years. And when he first heard of my arrest, he kind of was prompted to write this song, I was immensely, immensely touched by it, and the first time I heard it, I think I had tears in my eyes, and it kind of, I think, represents what music should be about, and it is, it should be your way of engaging with the world and changing the world, and I think it really epitomizes that. The second track, I'm not sure which one you've got planned. Yeah, it's by a local band, actually. The band is called 20 Year Hurricane, and the song is called Last Night. Now this is a bit more of an upbeat kind of track. It's still about the kind of the intricacies of human relationships and about essentially the ironic nature of the human condition and how we can deal with it through essentially humor and you know an amount of kind of realism. The band is a local band. It's a three-piece: Nick, Gareth, and Chris, and they're all from Nottingham. And for those who are interested, this band, 20-Year Hurricane, is playing at the Maze on the 14th of July, and I urge everyone to go and see them because they're fantastic.
And this song is.
It's called Last Night.
Get tired and lonely. Well, line up and join me. You get lost, you feel pain. And you know, you've been looking the wrong way. You're unhappy about it. Told you so, now you know all about me. I've been looking around and maybe start this thing again. Cause this story's only half written on a bad day. There's always more, I suppose. So if you're standing in the wrong place, you've been staring at the wrong face, take a long walk, smiling with open eyes. You're alive and you're not alone. Told you so, now you know all about me. I've been looking around here for the signs, and the signs say I don't care, I don't mind. It's been a long time. These are the points of view that are at the time. Could be better, could be worse, could be out of sight. It could be tonight.
Okay, that was a song called Last Night by 20-Year Hurricane, a Nottingham-based band, which is playing on the 14th of July at the Maze.
Okay, nice one. So, yeah, whilst that song was playing, some people in the room did want to ask, I think, one or two more questions. And yeah, John, did you have a question for Hitch?
Yeah, I was just wondering if you could say a bit about the role of the university and sort of your contact with them now.
Yeah, since my release, there's been very limited contact for obvious reasons. I'm still at the moment dealing with my case with the Home Office, which is the top priority at the moment. If I may just say a few words about the freedom of speech and the freedom of research angle, and what this case shows us, and I think the general mindset is what is the main worry at the moment. The government, throughout the past few years, has tried repeatedly and continuously to install a climate of fear, and I would even say paranoia, by instructing various institutions, including, unfortunately, academic institutions, to essentially be on the lookout for what we might say is subversive behaviour. Now, of course, nobody denies that there is, a need for people to act in a responsible fashion. But I think it's the interpretation of that very, very broad principle that's at stake here. And it's unfortunate that the government has now been pushing for legislation that forces institutions such as universities to essentially report to the police any sort of activities that they think are not acceptable or deemed to be acceptable, because before you know it, this could easily cover legitimate political protest. Where do we draw the line? And I hope this case at least highlights the need for the student and the activist community and the academic community to start the fight against this, pressure to install a climate of suspicion and a climate of fear and a climate in which people are afraid to research certain topics or read certain books or look at certain websites because of what other people might interpret that kind of action to be and to mean. To be honest, it's I think a much, much bigger fight than just something to do with a particular university or a particular institution. I think we should do our best to try and raise awareness of the government's attempts to curb our civil liberties, and the freedom to research is a basic civil liberties, I would argue. And it's at the heart of what has made Britain a great country. It's a freedom to inquire and to research and to seek knowledge. And if you have any sort of atmosphere in an academic environment that stifles the instinct to research, then this is the kiss of death for any hopes of actually having a meaningful kind of academic culture. It's the end of it, and we should fight it.
Okay. Well, I think there is a free speech campaign at the university that began earlier this year, and I guess that will continue now. So unless anyone else in the room has something they'd like to ask, as I'm looking around, we're going to just quickly go through some upcoming events that are happening in July. Oh, next track. Oh, sorry. You have another track for us, Hitch.
I'm afraid I do. I took the liberty of bringing three tracks. This last one is a slightly... I think it's a fairly interesting track in terms of its background. It's a track by a band called Juliana Down. They are the Middle East's biggest rock band. So their music is essentially Anglo-Saxon, if we can say that. It's a rock stroke alternative. But it's actually people from Dubai and from Abu Dhabi in the UAE. And the songwriter and the keyboardist is someone who's been to Nottingham University. Is someone I've met many years ago, and he's a close friend of mine. It's called the song is called Falls Apart, and it has a particular resonance for me because it's about how you deal with cataclysmic events in your life when everything seems to be going wrong, when everything is beyond recovery, when everything is bleak, and you have to somehow find some sort of coping mechanism and some sort of way of getting through to the end of the proverbial tunnel. And it has been a source of great comfort to me when I was released to listen to it and to get a lot of emotional support and sustenance from it. So Falls Apart by Juliana Down.
And now for some upcoming events. Wednesday the 2nd of July, a meeting to discuss setting up a Nottingham Food Not Bombs and to plan events related to food and climate change, 7:30 p.m. at the Sumec Centre. Saturday the 5th of July, an incredible veggie roadshow, free admission, 10:30 a.m. till 4:30 p.m. the Council House, Old Market Square. Monday the 14th of July, noise demo at UK Coal. Meet at Doncaster train station at 3:30 p.m. or outside UK Coal at 4 p.m. Sunday the 20th of July, Sumec Centre. It's the garden party. Be there or be square. It really is. It's the build-up for our next major events. The event on everyone's calendar. Friday the 3rd until Sunday the 11th of August. It is the one and only Camp for Climate Action at King's North Power Station in Kent. And finally, Friday the 15th till Sunday the 17th of August. It's action against the BNP's Not Happening Red, White and Blue Festival. The festival will be held on a farm on Codnor, Denby Lane, Denby, Derbyshire. Well, that's a festival for us at any rate. Anyway, goodbye.
Very good, very good. Next up, this is kind of the last feature of our show this month, is Captain Paul Watson from the Sea Shepherd. Sea Shepherd Conservation Society, who we've had, I think there was a guy called Dan who we interviewed before about that as well. Anyway, Captain Paul Watson was in London a couple of weeks ago and he gave a talk there. The talk is actually, the full talk is available on our website, which is riseupradio.wordpress.com. But we have an exclusive interview with him, which we did outside Westminster Court, where someone was on trial who did an action at the Japanese embassy against the ongoing Japanese whaling in the Southern Ocean. So this is the interview with Paul Watson. Paul Watson, hi.
Hi.
Could you just tell us a little bit about how the Sea Shepherd Conservation Society came about and what its aims are?
Well, I set the Sea Shepherd Conservation Society up 31 years ago in 1977 as an organization to intervene against illegal activities that exploit marine wildlife and habitat. So we're an interventionist organization. We're really unique in that respect. We don't protest, we intervene. So, and we specifically uphold international conservation law. And we're empowered by the UN World Charter for Nature to do so.
Could you tell us a little bit about the different kinds of conservation work that Sea Shepherd does? Some of the different tactics that are employed?
We intervene against illegal whaling, illegal sealing, shark finning, illegal fishing. We're an anti-poaching organization, and that involves everything from sinking whaling ships in port to confiscating long lines on the high seas to harassing and chasing Japanese whalers on the high seas.
Okay, and in your personal sort of history of activism, when considering tactics that are confrontational or may have involved property damage, have you had to overcome fear in the light of the possible consequences?
The Sea Shepherd Society doesn't break any laws. We've never been convicted of a crime. We've never injured anybody. We simply uphold international conservation law. A lot of people call us all sorts of names like eco-terrorists and pirates and everything, but that's just name-calling. There's no actual evidence to back up any of those allegations. Our opposition are criminal operations, and that's what we intervene against. We're not protesting. Our clients are whales and sharks and seals and everything. So I don't really have any fear of legal consequences. We're well aware of the legal situation that we go into. We are the interventionists. We are the law. In Ecuador, for example, we're working in partnership with the Ecuadorian National Police and with the Rangers. We work with Rangers in Colombia and Costa Rica. And so what we're simply upholding international law. So we are the law in that respect.
A lot of people may oppose whaling, but continue to eat fish. Why do you think it's wrong?
To eat fish?
Yeah.
The oceans are collapsing. All the world's fisheries are in a state of economic collapse right now. We're losing incredible numbers of species. We just cannot continue to maintain that kind of exploitation and expect the oceans to survive. I think right now the most destructive occupation on this planet right now ecologically is the fishermen. We are literally destroying the oceans. And if the ecology of the oceans falls, if it collapses, the oceans collapse, we die. It's as simple as that. So the fishermen actually could bring about the end of civilization. Not many people realize that more than 50% of the fish taken out of the ocean is fed to livestock. We've made the pig into the largest
marine predator on the planet. Pigs consume more fish than all the world's sharks put together. We're wiping out sand eels in the North Sea to feed factory farm chickens in Denmark, and puffins are starving to death as a result. There's simply not enough fish in the oceans to feed this increasing demand of increasing human populations. So, you know, that's why we advocate that there be no fishing and that we end the fishing industries.
What conservation work is going on now, and what is going to be happening over the next year?
Our priority campaigns this year is the ongoing campaigns to protect the Galapagos Islands. That's our line in the sand. If we can't save the Galapagos, what can we save? We'll be intervening again against the Japanese whaling fleet in Antarctica. We'll be opposing the dolphin slaughters in Japan, confiscating long lines in the world's oceans, opposing the slaughter of seals in Canada and South Africa, stopping illegal fishing activities in Brazil. So we've got certainly a lot of campaigns to keep us busy.
Okay, a lot of activists listen to our show. And what can they do to support the efforts of the Sea Shepherd, short of coming on board your ships?
Well, there's all sorts of things that people can do. I mean, of course, we like to have people volunteer for the crew, but also there's a lot of stuff to do on land, too. You know, everything from organizing. We really, the strength of any movement lies in diversity of talents and imagination and skills. And so there's a room for anybody, whether they tend to be into legislation, litigation, education, civil disobedience. It all works together towards the same goal. The strength of a movement lies in diversity. So we're looking out for that kind of diversity of experience. So yeah, there's all sorts of things people can do outside of actually serving on the ships.
But they need to use their imagination.
Well, you know, yeah. You know, I got, like, for instance, a few years ago, I got a call from somebody up in Scotland. They said, what are you going to do about gray seals are killing up here in the Orkney Islands? And I said, well, I'm over here on the west coast of North America. What are you going to do about it? And he didn't know really what to do. But anyway, we got together with him. He came up with the tactics, went up there and confronted the sealers, shut down the seal hunt, raised enough money, bought one of the islands to make it into a seal sanctuary. And that was just done by some average guy in Scotland who, well, you know, what we try to do in Sea Shepherd is to empower our volunteers, to make them understand that they have the power to change the world, that that's the only thing that ever has. For instance, the organization People for the Ethical Treatment of Animals was founded by one of my crew members. And that, so that's the kind of empowerment that we teach the people who volunteer, that they can make a difference. You know, we've had over 3,500 volunteers over the years participate on Sea Shepherd campaigns, and I think it's been a very educating experience for a lot of people, and they have learned that, yeah, they can. They have the power to intervene. They have the power to make a difference.
So what's the first point of contact?
Our website, seashepherd.org, you know, and people can get crew applications off the website and learn about what we're doing.
And can you recommend any inspiring books or reading?
Well, you know, I guess I could recommend my own books, Ocean Warrior and Seal Wars and everything like that. But really, you know, instead of reading, instead of going to meetings, instead of signing petitions, got to get out there in the field and actually get active. That's the most important thing.
Okay, that's just about it. Just one other thing. I've heard that you're a bit of a poet.
I'm actually working on two books. One's a collection of, one's an epic book of poetry on whales. It's 60 verses on whales, 60 verses on whaling, and 60 verses on saving whales. And I'm also working on a collection of poems, too.
Okay. Would you like to give us a taste, or should we wait for the upcoming volumes?
I don't know. I have to. I haven't got any right off the top of my head right here.
All right. Yeah, that is basically it. Thank you very much.
Thanks. I'm Captain Paul Watson, and you're listening to Rise Up Radio.
Anyway,
you want to talk a bit? It's the end of the show.
Yes, it's the end of the show. And, well, I'm just going to say goodbye now, really. Yeah, bye. Yeah, goodbye.
Bye-bye, see you next time.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.
Goodbye. Fare thee well.
Okay, till the next show, if you want to hear the extra audio, which is the talk by Paul Watson in London, and also an interview with one of the union leaders at the anti-BNP demo in London, you can go to our website, which is riseupradio.wordpress.com, and our next show will be out on the 1st of August.
Hi, I'm Elsa, and you're listening to Rise Up Radio!